runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 292 with guest Jeremy Moskowitz, recorded Monday, October 19th, 2012. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio, and thanks for tuning in, such as that is on the internet. And I am back at the end of the third leg of four legs of our crazy .NET Rocks Visual Studio 2012 launch road trip. And it's almost over by the time you hear this show, but you can go take a look at .NETRocks.com and see we've gone across the United States twice in an RV, but there were breaks, and I'm on the break during U.S. Thanksgiving, which oddly enough doesn't let you do any shows. So I got to go home. No Thanksgiving for us up in Canada. I just get a week off, and I get to talk to a few of my friends, including Jeremy Moskowitz, who's a group policy MVP to this day, I believe. Have you changed?
No, I am a sixth-year recipient of the Group Policy MVP Award.
Now, do the group policy folks really drive their MVPs hard? Because some MVP groups like the ALM team that really, there's a small group of MVPs and they work them really hard. And then now I'm in the ASP.NET MVP, yeah, which there's hundreds of us and we basically goof off.
Well, I think we're in the middle, actually.
Yeah.
I think we're the, as they say in yoga, the perfect balance between effort and ease, you know? And so, yeah, as a group policy MVP, I love it. I get to speak at places like TechEd, mm-hmm, which is great. And I also get to speak at, like, little itty-bitty user conferences here in Philadelphia, which was fun. So it's like you never know, really, like, super big gigs or super small but equally important gigs.
Sure.
People who may not get the opportunity to see these big events but want to hear from, gosh, I hope I'm a reputable source, some interesting information about, you know, how to do stuff they couldn't do before. And I think that's the job of the MVP,
sure,
bringing stuff to people that didn't know that it existed.
And do you feel like you have a substantial amount of influence back to the team? Like, you talk to a lot of folks about group policy. Can you take that information and say, guys, we should be doing this differently?
Yeah, well, I think every MVP, what's great about the group policy MVP folks is that there's no dispassionate folks,
yes,
among us.
Yeah.
We're all like, and I think that's the same about every MVP, right? You're not in the club if you're not like, if you're not throwing something through a window occasionally, you're probably not a good candidate to be an MVP, because that means maybe, you know, your passion level isn't quite where they would want it. And that's the thing. So, you know, in a way, it's like we might have these amazing ideas, but they have to be tempered with understanding what a big boat like Microsoft can do at any given point,
sure,
right? It's a big ship and the ship turns slowly. So if there's something that you really think needs to go in there, not just from a group policy perspective, I say the following statement for anybody who thinks that they've got a great idea that Microsoft should really be aware of. Anytime you want to pitch your idea to a program manager at Microsoft, just, you know, you meet him at TechEd or you find his email address and you're talking with him, they really only understand one thing. And the one thing that these program managers understand is scenarios. So it's not a matter of like, this would be better if this thing's got a blue feature or whatever. They don't care about like little itty bitty things. They care about entire categories of activity that can't be accomplished today, and with a small change, then a huge scenario opens up, or even a little, like if it takes a little bit of work, a huge scenario opens up. And so, you know, from a group policy perspective, there are a lot of things that are like that, but like where you think, oh, you know, it would be great if it was just this little checkbox that just did this thing. Unfortunately, when it comes to group policy, let's take it back to the 20-yard line. When you select, like, enabled, disabled, or not configured, what's really happening is you're setting generally a registry flag for some target application to do some magic. So, for instance, you want to kill the control panel. There's a setting called, you know, disable access to the control panel. So you find that policy setting. You click enabled. It sets a flag. The target machine will go ahead and download that, and magic occurs.
Mm-hmm.
The magic occurs because the target machine's running application, in that case, it's you know, explorer reads the setting and does the dirty work. So if you've got an idea for a checkbox that says, you know, make control panel work on Tuesdays at 3 o'clock, well, that's a great idea, but then explorer needs to be rewritten in order to make that magic happen. So it's one thing to like have a good idea, but you have to unfortunately see it all the way through to like what's really involved to making even what feels like a small change actually, you know, has to be busted apart wide open.
And if you're not prepared to do that yourself, you have to accept the fact that these folks inside of Microsoft who do have to look that way are going to say no to you because they have seen this larger picture.
That's true. And, you know, what they do, you know, Microsoft tends to be what's called a data-driven company. And yeah. I'm not speaking about the group policy team in very specific terms. I'm talking about Microsoft. You know, it's well known that they will, you know, query administrators and users and try to get, like, how are you using the product and blah, blah, blah. And only after data is aggregated and giant red flags of pain are discovered, then mountains start getting, you know, demolished and new roads going across those mountains. So this is great. This is actually, I'm really glad we're talking about this. When people ask me, hey, Jeremy, can you like re-troubleshoot this for me and then get something up to the group policy team? What I can do that, although, you know, it's not a super good use of you know, time. What's more important is that that person files the bug directly with Microsoft.
Right.
Because chances are, if you found this group policy weirdness, 800 other people found it too,
right,
but only 3 others reported it. And you got to be that guy. And the way it works for those who are not initiated is that you put down your credit card and Microsoft says, okay, we're going to put a hold on your credit card for X dollars. I think it varies from country to country. At last check in the U.S., it was like $150. And if it's a bug, you've really found a bug, they return the money on your credit card.
Right.
And I tell people to do this all the time because it's not worth like 8 hours or 16 hours or 32 hours of your week banging your head against something that could have a quick fix or is definitely a bug. Either way, for $150, you either get a solution or you get your money back.
Right.
So I always suggest that, you know, yes, you do your due diligence. Yes, you're an IT professional. Yes, you bing for the right solution. Can we say, you've got to say Bing instead of Google when we talk about Microsoft, right?
Can you Google it with Bing?
You Google it for Bing.
Yeah.
And then long story short, you know, you do your due diligence, but eventually you got to give up. You got to give up. And then once you give up, magic, more magic for you will occur. And mm-hmm. I think sometimes this, I'm guilty too. We have hubris and we beat our head against the wall. We got to give up sometimes. And that is why God invented third level tech support.
Well, I also think it's like you have to set a timer and just go, this is as long as I'm going to work on this. You know, I'm going to spend the afternoon. If I haven't cracked it by the afternoon, then just stop. But I also love the $150 thing. It's like, you really think you found a bug? Put your money where your mouth is.
That's right. And that's what Microsoft's counting on, right?
Sure.
They're counting on, like, let's think about that, really. I mean, if there's a big, really big bug, lots of people are going to file it, and then it will get covered.
Yeah.
If it is a bug and nobody files it, does Microsoft really care?
There's a tree falling in a forest thing going on here for sure.
Well, that's true. And during the Windows 8 beta period, I found lots of bugs, and I filed them. And some of them came back as, I'm not joking here, will not fix.
Nice.
And that is no shame. And that's not something I'm not beating up on Microsoft for getting a response of will not fix. I recognize what will not fix means. You know, for instance, like to take an extreme example, you take like a Windows XP and there's some weird group policy behavior. And, you know, when you stand on your hands and you look at the moon the wrong way, this other thing happens. Like, is the expectation that Microsoft is going to fix that, or should they put their engineers like toward the future?
Yeah. But they say the whole customer experience thing has shown 80% of the people experience 20% of the bugs. So focus on the 20%.
It does get that makes a lot of sense to me. And I think from all of us, if you do find something weird, you know, about group policy and group policy preferences, you're probably not alone. And let me explain that a little bit, especially the group policy preferences. You know, they came from a company that wasn't Microsoft, and they, for lack of a better term, they bolted it on to the existing group policy infrastructure. So in fact, said another way, group policy is the transport, and group policy settings and group policy preferences ride that transport. Okay.
Right.
So it's sort of like, you know, you got one inward box and two things run on the inbox. Well, the thing is that when they bought this other company out, they did their due diligence. They went through the code. They looked for some stuff. They tweaked it a little bit and then they shipped it. And not every bug on the planet has been found.
Right.
And group policy preferences is really made up of three constituent parts. There's what's called the CSE or client-side extension, or just the extension. And that's the things like shortcuts and drive maps and printers. Those are the kind of the popular ones.
Right.
Then there's this stuff called the action modes. And that's create, replace, update, and delete. And what those do is that based on certain circumstances, for instance, if... like maybe at all costs, I want to delete a drive map and then remove what Sally has and put on my X drive mapping for her.
Mm-hmm.
So like that's the second stage engine. And then the third stage engine is this thing called ILT or item level targeting. And that's sort of like the fine grained control. So deliver Sally the X drive when she's on a terminal server. Wow. Okay. So now you've got three engines. You got the client side extension. You got the create, replace, update, delete modes called the action modes, and then the item level targeting. I could probably figure it out, but there's a humongous number of permutations across all those things. And the chances that you found something that nobody else found because of your permutation is actually quite high statistically.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think you found a bug, you might have, and I think that that's important. You know, things should work as advertised, but bugs do happen.
Yeah, and you are in an interesting sort of rarefied space when you're working in there. Well, and I think you pick up the really salient issue, which is that group policy preferences is a V1 product as of Server 2008.
You could think about it that way, or the V1.0 in terms of Microsoft. That's true. And then, you know, it's gone through incremental bug fixes and updates, but not a lot of, there hasn't been anything like 2.0-ish around it. In a way, that's good, and in a way, that's, you know, a little not good because, well, then, gosh, everybody loves new toys. But on the other hand, the toys get a little bit more mature. One of the things that's kind of newer and you know, just an incremental baby step forward is Internet Explorer 10 has got the ability to be controlled now using group policy preferences.
Nice.
So you know, they're walking their way forward as they need to.
Well, and it does feel like 2012 is going to be the version 3 of this, right? Because R2 got some fixes, and now we should be better. I would think we're better.
Well, again, and when it comes to being better, I will say that the group policy team, when they get the bug alerts that come in, they actually do their due diligence, make an analysis, figure out if it's a legitimate concern, and if it's something that would be a high impact problem, will go the extra mile and try to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
But from I would not like categorize the group policy preferences, however, and this is my opinion, in this current version as like a 2.0. When I think of like a 2.0, I think UI is different, and feature sets are different, and the manual would be different, and we don't have that. And actually, I like that.
Hmm.
And the reason I like that is that this gives me the feeling, well, the idea of like not everything I used to know is now wrong.
Right. Yeah. Start like, over.
I hate that. That drives me totally crazy.
You're getting old, Jeremy. If you're pretty soon, you're going to start saying, "Get off my lawn."
Crazy kids! That's right. So the good news is that if you're a group policy propeller head or working to be one, the stuff you learn in Windows 7 carries forward to Windows 8. And that's one of the guiding lights when I do my group policy training and workshop classes, either live or online, is that I basically tell people it doesn't matter if you're really XP, Windows 7, or Windows 8, whichever one you choose to learn now, those skills will transfer upward to you. But you do, you know, to be a more efficient administrator, you know, there's no better time to like get your act together.
Sure. And it didn't seem like an awful lot of work has been done in Windows 8 around group policy, that it's basically the same.
But Well, the group policy engine itself, there are some interesting changes there in terms of like what's like, I don't know, like if you're a car guy and you look at the car on the outside and then you look at the car on the inside, sometimes there's some cool stuff there. One of my favorite things that's kind of new on the inside that nobody will care about except probably me, you, and three other guys, but let's talk about them, which is there's a service that group policy runs in order to do the magic. And because Windows 8 now is like so tabletized and emphasized on tablets, they actually put a lot of there's some newness around how the service works. Basically, without getting super detailed into it, the service will actually turn itself off until it's reused. So, yeah, and apparently it's not just the group policy service. Apparently, most services in Windows 8 will do this too. So there is a group policy implication to this, which is that some things can take a little longer to execute because when group policy refreshes, it has to spin up the service and then it has to spin down the service.
Right.
And so, you know, to learn, you know, how to turn that behavior back to the Windows 7 behavior might be important for desktops.
Sure.
You might want to leave it for laptops. And those are the kinds of things that people will want to know, or hopefully want to learn as they go forward to Windows 8. But, it's good. I actually, I just put the finishing touches on all the newness for Windows 8. There is a bunch of newness around offline files and folder redirection, which is nice. That's a big, to me, that's sort of a worth the price of admission right there for Windows 8. One of the things that people kept asking me about over and over again, and I finally solved this problem in Windows 8, is whenever I roam from machine to machine, I always get, folder redirection and offline files.
Right.
Is there a way on to get it only on certain machines, just my desktop and my laptop?
Right.
And there is now a way if you use Windows 8.
How? Share with us.
Well, I want to make sure I don't have the vocabulary words in front of me, so if I mess up the vocabulary words, forgive me.
Okay.
I will talk about this at some point in the future on GP Answers, but it basically comes down to what's called a computer affinity. I think that's the right vocabulary word. Forgive me if you know exactly what I'm talking about and I've got the exact wording wrong. But it kind of goes like this. Inside Active Directory itself, you lay claim to a user about what computers they own.
Oh.
So basically you kind of marry up the pairing of a user and his computers.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that if Johnny is on computer 1 and 2, magic occurs. If he's on 3 and 4, no magic occurs.
Right. He gets the public configuration.
Yeah, right. He doesn't get stuff like recopied all the way down to his desktop.
Right.
And he doesn't have to worry about offline files or folder redirection.
Right.
So like that part that's a really nice addition to Windows 8. I mean, right there, that's like, I think, worth the price of admission for a lot of people.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. What about generally managing the metro aspects of Windows 8 and group policy?
You know, there's not a lot there, I got to admit. People have asked me a lot, is there a way to bypass the metro stuff or configure it in some special fashion?
Yeah.
There's not a lot of there. And I think that's interesting. I'm not sure, like, let's brainstorm together. What do you think people would want out of that? I think I know, but what do you think people might want to be configured?
I mean, on one side, there's the idea of I want to be able to suppress Metro in general, right? I mean, these days, especially in the enterprise, I'm looking at that console as just the super start menu. And I'm finding myself when I'm using Win8, I'm barely in there. I tend to just type the names of the things I want to run, and the search system works so well, I just straight in and I end up at desktop most of the time.
I do too. I agree with you. But I think we're uncommon. I think you and I are, and other IT professionals for that matter, are different than the secretaries and the engineers of the world. They may not know the name of their application so well. I don't know about you, but when I meet end users, they go, yeah, I'm using the Microsoft.
Nice.
Or using the Microsoft what? so they'll type in Microsoft or, I'm using the AutoCAD. Oh, well, there's like 24 versions of AutoCAD.
Yeah.
So they don't know what they're even talking about so specifically. And I think you and me and other, of course, IT professionals, we put buckets in our brains in different places. We sort of partition our brains in a way that makes things easy for us. But I don't think everybody has that.
No.
And so, yeah, I think I see what you're driving at. I think it would be interesting if there were more more items there. The one thing that is there that I can think of off the top of my head is you're familiar with probably software restriction policies that debuted in XP, and
yep.
you're probably familiar with app locker policies that debuted, Windows 7. So app locker came into Windows 7. Well, there's a new app locker category for, well, you know, we can't call it Metro anymore. The UI specifically calls them packaged apps.
Okay.
So the official UI inside Group Policy Editor is packaged apps. I think the official marketing term now is something like Windows Store app, but inside Group Policy, it's called packaged apps.
Right.
And so, long story short, if you wanted to put the smackdown on any of these, you know, well, let's just call it Metro for this conversation. If you want to, you know, put the smackdown on Metro apps, you can do that. It is tricky business, to be honest. Mm-hmm. You have to really know what you're doing in AppLocker, because if you make the wrong misstep in AppLocker, and when I teach this in class, people nod their heads and say, yes, they've done this, which is don't be that guy who locks everybody out of their PCs.
Oops.
Yeah, so you have to really know what you're doing in AppLocker. This is one of those things that you can't get wrong. In other words, as they say, with great power comes great responsibility.
Sure.
And this is one of them. This is really like one of the top level ones.
Oh, I remember going back to software management services, the old SMS. The best trick you could do with SMS was push out, disable the SMS service.
So, like, you know, I once had a smoke detector that went up in smoke, detected itself, and died.
Yeah. So these are basic boo-boos. And honest to God, I think we have to do that ourselves at least once.
Well, that would be a real CLM or career limiting move to
right.
actually lock everybody out. I actually know a story. As far as I know, this is true. I didn't witness it with my own eyes, but let's just assume that it's true, because this is what he told me, which was he didn't come to my class, so he didn't know AppLocker, didn't know it all that well. He figured he knew what he was doing enough to be dangerous, or he read some documentation. You know, documentation can only take you so far to
yeah.
really kill it. You got to take, you know. So he turns it all on. He becomes that guy, and he locks, I'm not joking, everybody out of their machines all at once.
Wow.
And the only way to fix this is to manipulate the actual group policy that caused it in the first place. The problem was he couldn't get into the group policy editor to fix it in the first place.
Right. Because he'd locked himself out, too.
Because he locked himself out, too. So how did he get out of the problem, I hear you cry?
Yes.
This is how he didn't lose his job. This one is a miracle that if he didn't tell me, I wouldn't have come up with it myself. Because he asked me, how do you think I got out of this? And I was like, dude, I don't know. I know how to get out of it in some cases, but not the way you described. He said, well, we were lucky. I went to the server room, and it turns out on one of the machines, we had locked the console, and the GPMC was already running.
Okay. He was already logged in and locked.
He was already logged on, and the tool he needed to do the magic was already running.
On the machine.
So he was on the machine, and because it was already running, AppLocker won't put the smackdown on things that are, in fact,
right.
in process at that time.
Yeah.
So he was able to boot scoot around that problem just barely.
Well, and then there's that awareness of, if not for this perfect combination, I would be looking, dusting off my resume.
Yes, that is a scary, scary prospect. So, yeah, that's what's new. There's other stuff too, but those are some highlights.
Yeah, no kidding. And it's a bunch of good stuff, really. It is just an evolutionary improvement, though.
Well, it is, in fact, evolutionary. And one of the things that people ask me all the time is, will group policy sort of be, you know, taken to the next level? And I know we talked about, you know, my tool, Policy Pack, the last time we were together. You want to, like, find out what's new and improved?
Well, absolutely.
The last time we
talked? Yeah, I'd love to know where you're at.
So I can't remember exactly where we were the last time, mm-hmm. but I think we had, like, something like 20 or 15 packs, pre-configured packs.
Yeah.
And to remind people what Policy Pack does versus what Group Policy does, Policy Pack rides the same light that the Group Policy Settings and the Group Policy Preferences do. So in other words, both or all three, policy, preferences and policy pack all use group policy to do their magic, and they all do different magic.
Yep.
The policy pack magic will deliver and lock down applications so users can't work around it. So a real common use case is, say, Firefox. Mm-hmm. So we get, this is like a huge one. People need Firefox for XYZ application, but they don't want people to change the home page, or they want to make sure that users won't upgrade to the next version, because if they do, then the world catches fire for them. So by way of example, we have pre-configured packs for over 50 applications ready to rock, like Firefox, Java, Office, OpenOffice, Flash. Just if you've got it, we have a pack probably for it already.
Nice.
So the last time we talked, we were delivering settings and performing what's called UI lockdown.
That was more than a year ago. That was August of 2011, early days.
Oh, man. Well, that's cool, because now, beyond locking down the UI, which you can't do if the application itself doesn't support it, we now have this idea called ACL lockdown. What do you think I mean when I say ACL lockdown?
So you actually are enforcing the policy rules on individual files?
Yeah,
wow.
On files and registry keys. So if you have a super smart user who you know, knows what he's doing and goes and does regedit or modifies a file directly, or you've got a virus, like this came out of a customer that said, you know what, there's specialized viruses that will actually attack the keys of Acrobat Reader to inject their own URLs to allow them to be permitted. Wow, okay. So if that's the case, we can take ownership of those keys and ensure that there's no way except the system to work around it. So if the user runs a virus, you know, double clicks something evil, as the user, they can't perform that function anymore. Policy Pack owns the keys and the files at that point.
Right. That's cool. That's pretty low level, though. You're really digging in deep. Is there an overhead to that? Can I feel the fact that I'm running that?
No, it happens instantly. I mean, there's just no, you know, it just happens when the group policy applies.
Mm-hmm.
If the group policy doesn't apply anymore, like you move the guy from sales to marketing, it'll automatically peel itself off and it goes back to this, to whatever security was already on the file or the registry pieces before showtime. So we know what was on there. We take a little micro snapshot of that. And then when you are done applying the policy for whatever reason, it could be years later, we'll peel it back off and put it right back where it's supposed to be.
Nice. And so it only actually does anything when any of those things are trying to be changed.
No. It's always enforced. In other words, the stuff is always there. In other words, if you were to manually take control of a registry or file,
yep,
we just do it automatically and ensure that the bad guys can't do it or the user can't do it. We'll peel it back to the original, whatever the original was.
Right.
Should the guy move from sales to marketing or the group policy is deleted or anything else that makes the GPL fall out of scope.
Okay, cool. So you've come a lot. I mean, obviously, product has continued, right? More and more, I think, is happening.
We have one of the big things that people have continually asked us for was the idea. We currently help deliver settings into the Microsoft AppV bubble,
right,
and also the Citrix Zen app into Citrix Zen app. So the idea is wherever Johnny goes, if he's got XYZ application, let's call it Acrobat, you want to guarantee that those important security settings roam no matter what type of machine he has.
Right.
So now we've got everything. There's desktops, laptops, tablets, BYOD.
Yep.
There's Citrix. There's virtualized apps. So one of the things that we really spent a lot of time on in the last year is if an application virtualization solution exists,
mm-hmm,
such as Microsoft AppV or ThinApp or Symantec Workspace Virtualization or Spoon, which is my favorite named one, or Novell ZenWorks, those applications live in a bubble, and there's just no way to get group policy settings to them. What Policy Pack does is that we put a little pinhole right through the bubble. You ever see those, like, injecting smoke into a bubble,
yep,
you know, tricks? That's exactly what we do, and we manipulate the actual application inside the bubble using the power of group policy. So what this does for the guy is it makes sure that he doesn't have to decommission an application just to set some settings and put it back. And even if you did do that, there's nothing that prevents the user from working around the settings. So it's sort of like a no-win game. He takes the application, brings it back into a sequencer, changes the password strength from 8 to 12, and then the user just works around it. But when policy pack is in place, that can't happen. We ensure and consistently reinforce that those settings that the admin thinks is important enough or the business has a rule for are important enough, those settings are continually reinforced or locked down in the application so the user can't work around it.
Awesome. I always enjoy talking to you about this because the policies, can, you know, trying to manage all that yourself, you make yourself really crazy.
Don't have to go at it alone. That's the best part. There are a lot of free resources. I mean, just in case people don't know, you know, I'm the guy that runs GPAnswers.com.
Yep.
My vehicle of choice is a tip of the week or an interesting thought in people's email every week. That's not everybody's style. Not everybody likes to get an email dropped in their box every week. Yep. I love it. I get it from a lot of sources, but I recognize that's not everybody's way. So in case you care, here's some other MVPs that have great websites for you to learn more stuff at. This is just free publicity to my buddies. One of them is Darren Marelia. He's gpoguy.com. So gpoguy.com for Darren Marelia. And my buddy Alan Burchill, who's also, he's Australian and also was a technical editor of the upcoming edition of the Windows 8 book. He's at grouppolicy.biz. They both have something interesting to offer. Alan's website has a lot of step-by-steps and how-tos. And Darren's website has a great thing called GP Talk, which is a newsletter list where you, you know, it's sort of like a Google-style group where anybody can ask questions at any time. And on my website, gpanswers.com, we have a forum in case you have a question. We got smart people to help you try to answer your stuff, plus tips and tricks and downloads and book resources and things like that. So there's a lot of free resources for people, no matter what your skill level. So it's okay if you've been doing it a while or you're just getting started.
Right. And just to be perfectly blunt here, Policy Pack, not a free product.
Well, it's actually both free and not free. So we have a community mode version, and the way the community mode version works is that it will do most things for one pack. So the idea is that if you, let's say you really want to lock down Acrobat Reader, great, you can do it for 25 elements with an Acrobat Reader.
Okay.
And so the idea is it's free to use in that way. It's called community mode. We detail this in excruciating detail on policypack.com.
Right.
And then the pay mode is all you can eat, every pack, every feature, all tech support, every update. I can't think of any more everythings to throw in there. That's just everything.
And when you know, the whole idea here is you can get started with this and see its strength and solve simple problems. When you want to get serious, then you got to talk.
That's basically it. It's a really good trial mode that works forever, basically, is a community mode. And then when you're ready to rock and you think, okay, I've locked down this one app, the boss sees the value, I see the value, then at that point it's go time. And it's, you know, the best part is maybe I should raise my prices because people tell us it's relatively inexpensive, not to name prices or nothing, but people are very pleasantly surprised when we get to that point.
Nice. Hey, Jeremy, always fun to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
You too, man. Oh, this is one of my favorite activities of the year. Thanks a bunch.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.